So with your eyes closed, just start to pay attention to the fact that you're breathing. You don't have to count it. You don't have to manipulate it at all. Just start to acknowledge in your mind, I am breathing in and I am breathing out. And then start to notice that there's a little bit of a gap in between each breath that you're taking. After you exhale, before you take that next breath in, notice that there's just a little bit of a pause, however brief. And just let your attention land there in that space between. And when you find yourself there, just offer the silent, affirming thought, I am here. In that space after you exhale, but before you take that next breath in, I am here. Without you doing anything, without anything about this moment or your reality changing, that space offers you just a moment where there is stillness, where there is nothing for you to do except be exactly as you are in this moment. Take a long, slow, deep breath in. Pause at the top of that inhale. Hold it for 4, for 3, for 2. Sigh everything out through your mouth. And then when you're ready, gently open your eyes.
Gosh, your voice is so relaxing. That's got to be the best intro to the Slay podcast we've ever had, isn't it? Oh my gosh, I feel so much better.
You feel good, right?
Absolutely.
Just a little more grounded.
That feels so much better.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this has been great. We'll see you later.
I know. And that's a wrap. Welcome to Slay, the podcast where we dive into all aspects of female health and fitness. I'm your host, Louise Hazel, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about how modern technology and life has us all overstimulated. Some of you may have already found your groove when it comes to disconnecting from the world, but if you're anything like me, then you might have a hard time switching off. Maybe you're addicted to scrolling. Maybe you can't rest until your to-do list is complete, or maybe your career is just so demanding that you just can't get a moment's peace. Joining me today is my good friend, author of Don't Hate, Meditate, it's meditation expert and mindset coach, Megan Monahan, who's going to be teaching us how to unplug and get more out of your day. So if you're having a hard time switching off, then this episode is for you. Welcome, Megan.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. I've literally just had the most peaceful minute of my day. Thank you so much. Meg, we're going to get straight into it. Why do so many of us have such a hard time switching off? And by us, I mean me.
You. Well, let me ask you, because we just did a 1-minute meditation and you visibly and based on what you shared, felt very different before and after that. And that was literally 60 seconds.
Yeah.
So knowing that that's what's on the other side of taking that pause, what is the resistance that you feel around stopping for a moment? Because if I'm going to be really transparent, when I said, should we meditate before we start? It was like, oh, I don't know, maybe. Okay, yeah, let's do it. Right? So like, where is there an element of, I don't want to. Right? Like, how does that show up for you? And then I promise I'll answer all your questions. I'm
Excellent.
Only flipping it on you for this
flipped
one moment.
The script
just
real
for one
quick.
Moment.
I
just
love
for
it.
One moment.
Yeah, resistance.
So for you, like when you think about, oh, I'm just going to pause for a second, what part of you says no? Or what does that voice sound like? Or what's the excuse that shows up for
okay,
you?
I'm going to tell you. Yeah. It's almost like it comes from like the pit of my stomach and then comes into my shoulders. And there's like a physical tension that says, march on. And it's almost like there's, for me, I don't know whether anyone else is like this, if I have, I'm so goal orientated, if I have something in my mind that I have to accomplish that day, then it sits at the front of my mind and will not leave until I've checked it off of my list.
Yeah.
And so everything else, and I think maybe it's the thing that made me a good athlete, heptathlete, it's that kind of like that need to accomplish something first before I have permission or give myself permission
to rest, absolutely, to pause, even if it's for a minute. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's really natural to get our sense of self, to feel worthy, to feel like we deserve joy, happiness, fulfillment, whatever, wholeness. I think it's really easy to look externally to plug into those outlets. Mm-hmm. And I always talk about how if your source of self is external, it's kind of like when you're running around trying to find an outlet to plug your phone into. And at a certain point, your phone will start dying and there won't be an outlet near you and you'll start to feel like this isn't okay and I don't feel safe and what's going to happen. And if who you are is totally plugged into the roles that you're playing in your life, then of course you're never going to feel okay unplugging from those roles.
So what do you say to a person who, like me, is like, yeah, but I'm totally fine. Do you know what I mean? I'm so confident. I bet you've heard this a ton of times. I'm so confident in myself and I love myself so much, which is why, and also I know who I am. And so therefore I know that the best thing for me is just to keep going and then crash at the end of the day.
Yeah. I think if you are moving forward from a place of purpose and you feel fueled by that in a way that's driven by love and not fear, then that's great. Mm. You know, that sense of like, I am plugged into why I'm on this earth and I am in my zone of genius, and absolutely that will power you and you will feel incredible all day and then sleep really great that night. But if what's driving you, and I think this is what comes into play, especially for women, if what's driving you is I'm not enough, there's not enough, there's not enough money, there's not enough love, there's not enough whatever, and I need to like earn it and get it. If it's coming from a place of scarcity and fear or lack, that's when you're not being driven by something that's kind of mutually fueling you. Mm. So there's not that same exchange with that input output. And that's when you end up getting really burned out.
Mm.
You know, so for me, a lot of things, it's what's driving the action. It's not so much the action in and of itself. I've had days where I've taught for hours and hours and hours and hours in a way that someone might look and say, wow, that looks like a day, Megan. Maybe you should have, you know, put a break in that 12 to 8 block of work that you were doing. But it wasn't being driven by anything other than just like love and purpose.
But is that still okay? Is it okay that we women and men drive ourselves to the point of exhaustion in pursuit of our purpose? Is it okay that it's masked in purpose? Or do we just call it purpose? And is it really something else? That's kind of like, as you were talking to me earlier, I was just like, oh, you know, I am definitely like an overachiever. Yeah. There's, you know, a deep need to achieve, you know, during my day. And you were saying that's what my sense of self is to kind of tied up in. And I was like, oh, Megan's really touched upon something there. Like, what is it in me? And is it a flaw that needs to go out and achieve every single day and can't just sit on her ass and be okay with doing nothing, even on the days when I'm like, I'm having a mental health day, but I'll still do the washing.
Yeah. I think if the idea of rest feels threatening, then you have a dysfunctional relationship with stillness and being present and pausing.
That's me.
You know, if you know, in that, after that block of a lot of work, you are okay with pausing, and not because you've earned it, but because you are a being and you deserve to just be kind of whenever you want, then there's some, you know, some balance there. But I would say, no, I wouldn't ever encourage people to in a chronic way pursue exhaustion as a way to like work really hard to get what you want. And there is always a balance. You know, there's a lot of conversation of like, I don't need to earn my rest. And there's a lot of conversation on the opposite end of the spectrum, which is like, you just need to like get your ass off the couch and work for what you want. And all of those things are true.
Mm-hmm.
So neither of those in excess. You can't manifest the life you want by sitting on your couch and watching Netflix. You have to be actively involved and actively pursuing and be in the world and be in purpose and work and purpose and right, do all those things. And also, it's okay to pause. It's okay to stop. So like, there's always that balance. And I think if the idea, again, of rest feels threatening, there's work for you to do there.
Got you. Back to work I go. What I will say is, I would say for me, I'd say 80% of the time I'm in work mode. 10% of the time I can switch off completely.
Yeah.
That other 10% of the time I'm like switching off but being quietly productive around the house. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not going into work and to the gym, but I'm definitely taking care of some of the things at home. So in that sense, I kind of feel like maybe there's hope for me after all. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Also notice how long if you take time away, if you're the person that's like, what time away? You have work to do, right? But if you are taking time away, notice how long it takes you to sort of settle into that
to switch
pause.
On. You know, it's
and
funny.
If it takes days and days and days and days and days,
yeah.
I think the average, I just read this, I think the average is it takes 4 days of being like on vacation, quote unquote, before your nervous system starts to like unravel itself from that heightened state. For a lot of people. So notice what that feels like for you.
I've got such a confession to make.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, we're filming this before the Christmas holidays, and this is going to be the first time in 2 years that Eric and I are going back to London. We've got 2 weeks back in London. And he's really excited to switch off and do nothing. And I'm like, I'm going to be
like,
bored.
You're like, can we plan a pop-up there? Can
Dude,
we?
I'm going to be so bored. I'm like, what are we going to do for those? I'm like, I'm going to be bored after like the fourth day. Like I know for me that, you know, 4 days rest and then that fifth day, I'm going to get restless and I'm going to be like, I need something to do now.
Well,
I'm
going to
be trying to fill my diary without
everybody
a doubt.
Has a different makeup, right? Like elemental makeup. So, you know, in Ayurveda, we would look at what you call your dosha, your mind, body, personality. Mm-hmm. Everybody's made up of different elements and has a dominant kind of usually couple of elements that make up who you are. You have a lot of energy naturally. So your idea of rest might not be taking a nap or binge watching Netflix. It might be, oh, I'm going to go help my mom garden, or not in winter, but you know, something else in London, or I'm going to go take a walk, or I'm going to, right. It might be something that on the surface looks more active, but for you is disengaging from the sort of productive element.
Talking of disengaging, Sam and I, producer Sam, did a little bit of research before you came in. We found out that on average, people spend 3 hours and 15 minutes on their phones each day.
I mean, that seems low to me, but yeah.
And apparently the average person checks their phone 58 times a day. Is that surprising to you, Megan?
No, I think it's low. I think people are on their phone way more than 3 hours.
I think you might be
100%.
Right. 100%.
So or a computer in a leisure sense. Or a TV, you know, in front of a screen. Way more than 3 hours.
So if we're spending 3 hours, 15 minutes on our phones, how much time should we spend meditating?
I mean, I am a big fan of a 20 to 30 minute twice a day. That's my ultimate recipe for people.
Uh-huh.
And if that feels completely undoable, then once a day.
I was going to say that sounds
15,
like
20 minutes.
The funny thing is I'm hearing myself and I'm like, oh, well, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
But then I'm also on the flip side, like a trainer, and is like, oh, we spend an hour a day training. So I'm like seeing it now from like two perspectives.
Yeah.
What's so good about that 20 to 30 minutes? So what can you achieve during that time?
It really does take, again, not unlike working out, it really like warming up a muscle. It really does take your brain, your mind around 8 to 10 minutes for that initial kind of slowing down. You're never stopping your thoughts when you meditate, but you are slowing down the fluctuations of the mind. So instead of like thought, 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 it might go thought, thought. And that really really kicks in a palpable way after those first 8 to 10 minutes. So I always say to people, if you only have, we just meditated for a minute. If that's what you have today, then that's great. And you'll get some juice from that. But if you can go deeper, doing, you know, a block of core work is better than doing 5 sit-ups, right?
It absolutely is.
So think of, you know, for you especially, and anyone listening to this that, you know, is in your world, meditation is your mental workout. And we spend all of this time paying attention to our physical muscles and we just ignore the mind, which is the biggest muscle that you have access to that will lead to transformation in your life.
With so many people ignoring that part of their mind, what have you seen in terms of like, what detriment does that do us in terms of our, you know, lifestyle, our daily life, the way we live our lives? What have you seen as the most prevalent issue for people that aren't really nourishing that part of their minds?
I mean, I think from a physiological, let's go that route and then we'll go like the more woo-woo route so we don't lose people right away. I think it is crucial right now that we are in the driver's seat of how our bodies are responding to stress. And meditation is one of the scientifically backed best ways to physiologically change the shape of your brain so that you are navigating stress differently and coming to stress from a more responsive, mindful place rather than that autopilot reactive way.
So talk us through a scenario and how you would coach somebody through it. So say, for example, I just had a humongous fight with my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Or husband.
Yeah. So instead, you know, if you're a meditator, let's just say, your fuse line, the space between you getting into a fight and him saying whatever he said, the space between that moment and you doing anything in response will be longer. So a version of you that doesn't have mindfulness and mindful awareness would immediately go into like fight, flight, or freeze, have an immediate, very conditioned reaction, likely the same way that you kind of always respond to things in the world, the way that you were taught when you were young, what you saw, how you were like imprinted. And that may or may not be what actually supports what you want in that moment, right? If you are mindful and you have mindful awareness, not only is literally the parts of your brain that activate that stress response, that fight, flight, freeze, not only is that going to slow down, but you're just naturally going to be more aware of it. So that might happen and you would have this space where you could say to yourself, wow, I'm feeling really angry. Like I'm feeling really pissed and I'm having a lot of feelings of resentment towards you in your, I mean, this could all be in your head. And it sounds insane to think that you might do that in like the middle of like a heated exchange, but you absolutely can in real time.
Does it happen quickly or is it those thoughts coming in?
It sort of feels like, I always used to use the reference of like the Matrix, but then I started really aging myself and clients would be like, I know, I've never seen that. And I was like, cool, I'm 39, it's fine. So, but in the Matrix, you know, you think about, or like that movie Wanted where they slow down time and they like curve the bullets, right? Mm-hmm. It's that. That's what it feels like when you're a meditator. It feels like you just have this sort of slow motion moment where you can look at everything from this bird's eye view, look at yourself, almost step out of yourself and say, huh, like this is happening. I feel this. And then in that moment, you get to decide how you want to respond. And maybe it's still you, but likely not. Likely you're not going to have that same reactive response.
When have you bent space and time and used your own kind of form of meditation? Like, how did you get to the point where you were like, I'm going to be a meditation coach because this is transformative for me?
Well, I think one of the most effective ways to change your life is to have, you know, a debilitating crisis of some kind. And that happened, you know, luckily and unluckily for me when I was in my early 20s. And I started to have really adverse physical responses to the stress in my life. I was working in the music industry. My dad was given a prognosis of a year to live because of his alcoholism and, you know, the effects of that on his body and his liver. And I wasn't okay. And I didn't know how to properly process the stress that I had been experiencing, and my body started to break down. I had to get my gallbladder taken out from gallstones from stress. I had chronic hives, things that are not okay. Like losing non-vital organs is not the sign that you're thriving and like killing it in life.
Do you feel like you were bottling a lot of that emotion?
100%. Yeah. I was like, you know, yeah, the only child, the very compliant, very like good girl that just was, you know, from New York, I'm fine, very charmingly self-deprecating, you know, very, very sarcastic, you know, lots of ways to kind of hide anger or pain, dissatisfaction, unfulfillment. And I absolutely spent the first 22 years of my life like, I'm fine, everything's fine, totally fine, everything's cool, I got this. Was not fine.
And when did it crumble? When did everything crumble?
In my early 20s, 22, 23.
Can you remember like a specific moment where you were like, oh, I'm not okay?
Yeah. Well, I worked with a therapist at the time after my gallbladder was taken out, after I was having hives. My medical doctor wanted to put me on Xanax for the hives. And she said, you know, you are just, you know, you're overwhelmed. Like, let's put you on Xanax. It'll help with like the anxiety that you're experiencing. The hives should go away. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't just want to take something for this to go away. And I'd been working with a therapist who, and we were clearly uncovering some things that, again, were not fine. And I was feeling a lot of things for the first time. And my therapist said, you know, I think you should learn how to meditate. I think you need to find different ways, again, to metabolize the stress in your life. And this is how not in this world I was. I Googled, I'll never forget this. I literally Googled wellness Southern California. I was living in LA. Wellness Southern California.
What
this
came
is also
up?
How not a thing meditation was.
Avocado toast came
15
up,
years ago.
Didn't it?
No, 15 years ago, avocado toast wasn't even a thing.
Oh, God.
15 years ago. None of this was in the mainstream, right? There were no apps. There were no studios. Like, there wasn't anything. So the first thing that came up was Deepak Chopra's Wellness Center.
Yep.
I called my mom and I said, do you know who Deepak Chopra is? Because I definitely didn't. And she was like, yeah, I know who Deepak Chopra is. And I was like, oh, is he like legit? Like, is this like a person that's like maybe reputable? And she was like, yeah, it's like kind of a big deal. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I went down to San Diego where his wellness center was at the time. And I took a free intro to meditation class. And I had a mind-body medical consultation with one of the MDs there. And they talked all about how to have a more integrative approach to your health, how to look at your health, not just from the symptoms that you're having, but from these core imbalances. And that was something that was completely new to me. And it was this sort of aha moment and this moment of relief that, oh, wow, maybe there's physical things happening because of some emotional things. And maybe there's a way for me to shift this without having to constantly be taking something to stay in one piece. And so I took a huge leap of faith and signed up for a week-long program on a credit card and went down for a week and learned how to meditate and learned how to practice yoga and learned about Ayurveda and all these different ways of living and being. And within a year and a half, I had quit my job and I was working there.
What was the biggest takeaway from the course that fundamentally shapes the way you live right now?
The 100%, and I talk about this when I am giving talks especially, the biggest takeaway that I had, and I remember these moments so vividly, was sitting in this room learning how to meditate and hearing the words, you are not your thoughts, and you don't have to believe every thought you have. And I had never heard that before. Up until that point, I didn't realize it, but I was just opting into every single thought that I had. I was believing every thought that I had. And I had a lot of just batshit crazy thoughts that definitely did not need to be believed, that definitely did not need to be in the driver's seat of my life. And so meditation as a tool was 100% like the huge thing that I took away with me, but also having a different relationship with my mind. Because everything that you do, everything that you choose, everything you buy, everything you date, everything you eat, everything you say yes or no to, all of it is coming from a thought. Your thought is the birthplace of everything in your life. And most of us are running around having the same thoughts every single day. 70% of our thoughts are the same thoughts every single day. And most of those thoughts are fear-based, are conditioned. And so many of them, unless you have the ability to check in and be aware and question, most of them really aren't supporting how you want to feel and what you want to see created in your life.
So when we talk about those thoughts, how are we separating? How are we sifting through, you know, some of those thoughts that have been imprinted, which you mentioned earlier, on us.
Yeah.
Some of those thoughts are that are inherently ours that we've come to our own conclusions of. Mm-hmm. And what about the things that we're absorbing from the environment around us? How do we sift through and make sense of, wait, what do I actually feel in this moment? Who am I actually in this moment?
I mean, it's going to be super cliche, but you meditate. And it's not in the magic of meditation isn't usually in your meditation. Yes, I've had some very cool meditations. I've had some very cool, like, otherworldly, like, things happening and visions. And yes, that's happened. But more often than not, my meditations are just me sitting there quietly with my eyes closed, noticing my mind, right? The magic of meditation, the benefit of your meditation happens outside of your practice. Mm. And again, not unlike working out, you don't really work out for the moments that you're lifting weights. Yes, you might have a great workout and you might feel really good or be really inspired, but you work out because of how you feel then throughout the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And so as you build that muscle of awareness, which is what you're doing when you meditate, it's doing mental reps. This is how you work out, totally proper form. You are strengthening that muscle. And from that point, you're subtly aware of everything. Mm. So I'm pretty aware of all my thoughts.
Wow.
And it's not always fun. Like, it's so much easier to keep pressing the snooze button on your consciousness.
I was like, if I was aware of all of my thoughts, I'd be exhausted. I'd be awake and asleep at the same time, I think.
Well, you do end up living in this kind of duality where you are
tuning some
in
some
your
stuff
body
in,
and in your moment and in this like present moment, time and space, and also aware of it all and kind of witnessing it all. And again, it's not that you won't still have the negative thought, the fear-based thought, that old self-limiting belief, that old whatever it is for you, but you're going to be aware that you're having it. Mm-hmm. And I find that I will only let myself go down that rabbit hole so long because I know that I'm doing it. So you can really only like bullshit yourself so much when you know in every single moment that you're doing it, that you're like when you know better, usually you really do like show up better, you know, like, for the most part.
Oh, I'm going down that rabbit hole
again. And then you can check yourself and say like, wow, like, where is this thought coming from? And like, do I want to believe this? And like, is there something for me to really unpack here? Or do I just need to like change my state and shift gears?
So talking of like changing your state, this is something that I thought was really curious. You know, we're now being encouraged. We talked about screen time. We're now being encouraged to utilize our devices as tools for meditation. But I feel like, is it not ironic that we're asking ourselves
unplug,
exactly. Like, what's, you know, what's that about? What's your thoughts on, you know, the way in which we're using and interacting with technology, but also trying to unplug, trying to get to that deeper level of consciousness and awareness? What role does the technology have to play there? And how can we unplug perhaps further?
I think that there are so many cool things you can do with technology when it comes to regulating yourself. I just started wearing this this device that essentially like tunes your nervous system, whether you want it to be a little more up because you're out and being social.
What's it called?
It's called the Apollo Neuro. I'm not brand. I'm not, no trade, no affiliate, nothing. I'm just a fan. And that's great. And I love that. And that's something that 100% I use and will lean into. I also know how to regulate my nervous system using other things that don't involve a plug. So for me, it's always same thing with meditation. You know, I have a 21-day guided meditation, you know, course that you can go to and get an email every day with a meditation because that makes it a lot easier for people to meditate every
day. Where are we finding this course?
You can find it at meditatewithmegan.com.
Fabulous.
Yeah, 21 days of meditation.
So this neuro device that you're talking of, you're at home, you're watching the Golden Bachelor finale. Does the watch start pinging off when Gary, the Golden Bachelor, starts to decide and make his final decision?
It's not a watch.
Oh,
it's just
a device?
It's just this thing that kind of buzzes, that vibrates.
Got you. Once it's you start to get a little bit like overly stimulated, neurally stimulated?
It's not responsive in real time to you. You basically on an app, you open up and you choose the setting. Mm-hmm. So it might be like wind down or fall asleep or right. social or so focus.
It therefore is yes. affecting your yes. sensory yeah. like receptors. Yeah. Aha, yeah. got you. So you're basically telling it, I'm now
what I could use a little support with.
Got you. Yeah, so yeah, I'm yeah. now in a period where I really need to wind down. I've yeah. had a long day. I've got perhaps a long day ahead of me tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I really need to yeah. get into shutdown mode.
Exactly.
Excellent. Yeah. I think I was chatting to Sophia Bush about this device, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really, yeah. It's cool. Yeah. I like it.
She really enjoyed it. And possibly that device, not saying it's the same one.
So it's but, yeah. like finding the balance of, you know, I tell people when I work with them, I don't ever want you to be beholden to me and my voice to be able to meditate. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm a really great teacher, you're never going to see me again. And I'm going to teach you to meditate and like you're going to go live your life beautifully. Mm-hmm. And right. And if I can support you, let me know. But I think there's room for both. But I think it is important that you have a sense of autonomy over your wellness mm-hmm. and that you're not constantly outsourcing it mm-hmm. and that you're actually learning and getting tools so that you have the ability to do it even if your device dies.
So talking of tools, why is it that we're, you know, entering our mid to late 30s and, you know, wherever you are, our listeners as well, and yet we're lacking in this area? Is this something that needs to be integrated into schools? Is there a curriculum? Like, yeah. what level should we be picking up these meditative skills?
I mean, I work with kids that are as young as like 3 and 4. And it's remarkable seeing them like pick it up so quickly and they just soak it in and it works and they're meditating and they're learning how to regulate their emotions. They're learning how to communicate their feelings
oh, wow.
with more consciousness. I think that there's room for it in utero. You know, we generationally were not taught that, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in my early 20s, which is still young. You know, I'm 39 and that was still young to be learning this. But it wasn't a part of the culture in a mainstream way. And
so with toddlers and young children, what are you seeing is the impact on them? Like, how are their behaviors changing? What are you noticing?
I notice, especially if it's a little older. So, you know, young kids, 4-year-olds, mm-hmm. it's more, I would say, their ability to self-regulate, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, mom, I need to go sit down for a few minutes and meditate. I'm feeling overwhelmed. Like, I have little kids that will actually like say
wow.
that in a very authentic, not, you yeah. know, parroting robotic way.
I need a timeout. I'm taking
yeah,
myself out.
Yeah, I'm taking out. A timeout. Yeah, I'm tapping out for a few minutes. Like, I'll be over here meditating. I have parents that'll send me pictures of their kids like meditating in their car seats, you know, what in the back seat, just, you know, sitting there with their little.
That's amazing.
I think, you know, what I see with older kids, especially teens, is their relationship with anxiety mm-hmm. and their relationship with stress, especially yes. as it relates to school. Mm-hmm. And you know, the ironic part is that when I'm teaching kids, whether they're 3 or 13 or 33 or 63, it's all the same stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just the name that I give it or how mm-hmm. I explain it. But everyone's struggling with all of the same things. Mm-hmm. You know, you're struggling with the same thing that my 4-year-old client is struggling with.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm having a big feeling and I don't know what to do about it. Mm-hmm. And we just don't have the tools, mm-hmm. you know?
So I feel like we're having this conversation daily in the gym. We talked about
big feelings,
big feelings in general. You know, I don't want to put it on this generation, you know, this upcoming mm-hmm. generation. And obviously we talked about how our parents' generations didn't have yeah. any, you know, access to any of this yeah. information. But we're talking now more and more about anxiety. And it's become almost like, you know, the buzzword when yeah. it comes to health and wellness.
Yeah.
You know, what is it about the generation that's coming behind us that is leaving them so anxiety ridden mm-hmm. and so debilitated by their emotions?
Yeah. I mean, big question. The first thing that comes to my mind is that our generation didn't have technology in the same way. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a computer until I was in my home until I was 13, 14.
Yeah.
I had a cell phone when I got my license mm-hmm. for like emergencies. You know, we didn't have that same relationship. We didn't have the option to distract ourselves. The stimulus coming at us wasn't as fast. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were in the car, we just had to like look out the window and entertain ourselves. Mm-hmm. When we were little, we had to pretend, mm-hmm. you know, and the generation past, what is it, Gen Z, doesn't have a world without technology. Mm-hmm. And I think they weren't taught, because they didn't have to be taught, how to just be with themselves, mm-hmm. and how to be connected to the world around them in the same way, how to be connected to nature, how to be grounded mm-hmm. in the world. I mean, technology is very, you know, energetically ungrounded. Yeah. That's why we plug electronics into grounded outlets.
Do you think that's hindering their ability to connect on a human level?
Yeah. I think especially post-pandemic, mm-hmm. eye contact, mm-hmm. you know, is hard for people, hard mm. for adults, but, you know, younger generations that are so used to looking down at a screen mm. or talking to people through a screen, eye contact is really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I was working with this 16-year-old and she said, you have really strong eye contact.
Wow.
And we had this whole conversation. I also do eye gazing with little kids, mm-hmm. and it's really fascinating to see how often they want to look away. So absolutely, you know, because you don't have to connect in that same way.
Yeah. Eric loves a little 10-second eye gaze.
A little eye gaze.
He loves it. It's literally one of his favorite.
Is it your worst nightmare?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he knows it. We'll get into the elevator before we go into the apartment, or when we're heading down. He's like, okay, 10 seconds of uninterrupted eye gazing. And I'll go really wide-eyed and crazy.
You just disassociate for a second.
Yeah, and I'm like, and I'll count. That's just who I am.
I love that. I love an eye gaze, a 10-second eye gaze. I love an 8-second hug, a super long 8-second hug.
I'm going to try that in the gym tomorrow. Mm-hmm. See how everyone reacts. Morning.
8-second hug. But you'd be surprised how uncomfortable people are with like an extended hug.
Yeah.
People that you know, not strangers. Yeah.
I think if somebody gave me an 8-second hug, I'd run
we'll
for the
We'll do it
hills.
Today after we've already meditated. I'm going to give you an 8-second hug.
Oh God. Okay. Yeah. Then yeah. I love that.
It's also, you know, the rate at which the world moves, the rate at which business moves, the rate at which our social lives.
Could we just do a 4-second hug? Because the world is
just
spinning so fast these days.
We're trying to get out of it. And we're going to double it if you keep at it. No, but the rate at which the world is moving has evolved so much faster than our brains, mm-hmm. right? Our brains have not developed. Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't gotten a new operating system in a minute.
Yes.
And our devices get a new operating system every like 4 to 6 months.
Yes, they do. So Meg, how do we unplug to get more out of our day?
I think the biggest thing for me, and I always tell clients this, is you have to get clear on why you're doing it. Mm. You know, I am the first to admit, I say this all the time, meditation feels a lot like sitting and doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And again, especially because the benefits of it show up outside of it, mm-hmm. it's so easy for your brain to say, we don't have time to do this. Mm-hmm. We don't have time to sit and do nothing. There's so much to do. And if you recognize that a meditation practice is literally the antidote to kind of anything, mm-hmm. physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, materially, you know, if you knew that you taking that time away and unplugging would be the key to getting everything you wanted, you would do it. Mm-hmm. Even though it feels kind of boring and kind of redundant, it doesn't really feel like much of anything in the moment, you would do it. So I always say, get really clear on what the why is mm-hmm. for your meditation practice.
What
is it for stress? Is it for anxiety? Is it for, you want to manifest, you know, your dream partnership, you know, why are you doing it? Mm. And make it a reason that's important to you, not one that society says is important. So if you're like, oh, I know I should be meditating, you don't have the right why mm-hmm. yet.
And what about the how? Like, what is it we need to be doing? Do we need to be switching off our phones? Do we need a special room? Like, give me the top tips of like how we should be meditating. Know, what's the best methodology?
Of course, there are principles. Like ideal, like sure, create a ritual, burn the same candle, put the same incense on, get your meditation shawl, get the little cushion, get your mala. Great, that's fantastic. Like do that,
that
and then
sounds,
take the Instagram
that
picture.
Sounds lovely.
But like that's probably not the sustainable practice for you.
But that sounds lovely. Like go back and give me that list again. A
you
meditation
can
100% shawl.
Ritualize it. So yes, sitting in the same place every day, mm-hmm. if you can. you know, maybe you light the same candle. You want to go buy a shawl. I can already tell. Go buy your shawl.
I actually got given one. I was thinking about this like furry blanket that our clients Becca and Nicole got me for Christmas last year. I was like, oh, that's furry.
Yeah. Great. Go on. Use your furry meditation blanket. Mm-hmm. Turn your phone on silent. Commit to not put it, you know, if you want to put it in the other room or just put it on do not disturb. If you're using it for an app or you're on Meditate with Megan, you're opening your email to meditate, just put it on do not disturb so that nothing's coming in. Mm-hmm. And commit to staying in your practice until the timer goes off. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, I'm going to do it for 15 minutes, don't get up at 5 minutes mm-hmm. when your mind is like, we don't have time for this shit. Like, let's mm-hmm. go do the thing we got to do.
Yeah.
You know? And then the other part is, really look for the evidence of your practice to show up in your life. Because what happens generally is, and this happens all the time with clients, you know, things get better. The pain point is less, and then they stop doing the things. Mm. They stop doing the work. People with dieting, people mm-hmm. do it, they eat really clean for 6 months and they're working out and they're paying attention to their body. And then all they want to do is just like go out into the world and be seen in their new like self.
Absolutely.
And go out to eat and like
summer
do all the
comes
things.
Around. Absolutely.
And then a month later they're back and they're like, oh my God, everything's just terrible again. And I've gained weight and I don't feel healthy. I have no energy because mm-hmm. they stopped doing the things that got them to the place that they wanted to get to. That happens with meditation all the time.
I was going to say, are we journaling post meditation? Like I was, as you were talking then, I was like, oh, maybe it would be really good to write down those uh-huh. thoughts that are coming up.
After your practice?
Absolutely. So that then yeah. we can observe the things that are coming up for us. And then you know, we were talking about that sifting through. Mm-hmm. I can see myself now just like crossing off anything that isn't for me and then just circling. I'm like, oh, there's the value, you know?
I mean, I love that you're giving yourself more work.
More time.
I love
more
that you
checklists.
Went from like, I don't have time to do this to like, what else? What other action items can we add to this practice of
exactly.
nothingness?
My meditation become a visualization.
You can totally journal. And I would say, you know, let your practice be really effortless mm-hmm. and I'm happy to, you know, give anyone tools and like ways to meditate. If anyone has questions, you can always spiritually slide into my DMs, but, mm-hmm. Let your practice be a relaxed practice. So I don't want you I can already tell all throughout your meditation, you're going to be like, oh, I have to remember that thought. I have to like unpack that later in my journaling session. And I have to, right. So like really let your practice be what it is. And mm-hmm. if you want to journal, if that sounds, you know, resonant to you as a practice, then I love that. Mm-hmm.
Got you. Yeah. You mentioned the word effortless, which brings me on to your training. Mm. Now, obviously, we know each other we met through a friend.
Yeah.
You were working at Unplug Studios.
Yeah.
And, you know, a little bit later on, you became a client here at Slay. Meg, talk to me about your fitness journey and the way in which your mind-body connection mm-hmm. and that ability to meditate has helped you in the physical realm.
Yeah. I love working out. I love lifting heavy things. Mm-hmm. It feels so empowering to see, it's so tangible, the progress. And, you know, the progress with meditation is so intangible. It's so, like, subtle. And with weights, it's like, oh, last week I was lifting 17 and a half, and this week I'm doing 20.
That's right.
So satisfying. Mm-hmm. I also will say, having a connection to your mind and again an awareness of your thoughts mm-hmm. has been wildly effective. And you always make fun of me in a lovely way. You'll be like, oh, Megan, she'll just eat whatever you tell her to eat and she'll do whatever you tell her to do, because it's just not a question.
Yes.
It's not even about a discipline. Mm-hmm. It's about I'm aware of my mind. And mm-hmm. so if my mind is saying, oh, you should really like do a cheat day and mm-hmm. just totally go off the rails, and I know that I'm going to feel physically terrible because mm-hmm. I'm eating something that doesn't work with my body, or it's going to offset me from a goal, I just don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And there's an awareness of like the deeper why versus just like the surface thought.
You're extremely connected to that. I see the way that you show up every single day, mm-hmm. but also, you know, there are very few people that turn up on time for their workouts. You're not one of those. You know, you are that person yeah. that's very regimented. Mm-hmm. I know, like, if there's a 6 a.m., Megan's going to be here early. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure the gym lights are on and she's ready to rumble, because, you know, the way that you practice mm-hmm. is extremely disciplined. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that in itself is almost a muscle as well,
yeah.
that you, in particular, exercise yeah. every single day.
Yeah. It just isn't reality stops being negotiable when your awareness is rooted within yourself and not rooted in your external.
Mm. Do you feel like there's a development of resilience?
Yeah.
In the practice of meditation?
100%. And
then, do you find that your actual physical dedication to training and fitness comes from the resilience that you've built mentally? Or do you think it's the physical resilience that then lends itself to the mental? Like chicken, egg, which came first for you?
I think it's actually like a totally different thing. I think it's my biggest resistance to not even working out, but physical, and really what's underneath that is like pushing my body. Mm-hmm. What I've recognized in the last few years, but definitely working out here, has provided more clarity on that. There's always been a level of fear because I have had health issues. Mm-hmm. There's always been a level of fear that, not that I'm going to like hurt myself, but that I'm going to push my body too hard and I'm going to get sick.
To a point of like exhaustion.
My immune system's getting overly activated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I didn't necessarily put those two together mm-hmm. in as analog of a way. Mm-hmm. And I've been to, all throughout the years, I've had a lot of autoimmune issues, and I've had doctors say, you have to watch how hard you work out, yeah. or you have to watch this, or if you feel like you want to take a nap after you work out, you probably pushed yourself too hard. Mm-hmm. And so for me, there's always been a really difficult, and I still sometimes struggle with this, a difficult way to tap into what that truth is for me.
The barometer is,
and like what is it, if my mind is like, oh, you need to stop for a second, is that really me? Mm-hmm. And like, my body's truth, or is that just my body being tired and me not wanting to like work hard anymore? Mm-hmm. And that's really tricky.
Yes.
And it's really tricky. And I've really, mm-hmm. I think, much more so mastered that lifting weights.
Mm, how so?
And really, because I'll be working out and I'll tell my trainer, I'll say, I can't do 12. Like I can do 8. And we'll be doing 8, and then I'll put it down. And then next time I'll say like, okay, I want to try to do 12 this time. And right, there's like a level of curiosity now. Mm-hmm.
Would you say that there's like an ongoing negotiation and compromise? Sounds like you're kind of like, okay, if I prove I can get to 8 and I do the 8 and I feel okay, then I'm okay to go to the 12. Like,
yeah,
you're creating,
I give myself
safety.
Permission to be curious.
Uh-huh. Got
and
you.
To like lean into like pushing myself. Mm-hmm. Also knowing that it's safe if I really can't. Mm-hmm. And I've really learned the difference between my body saying, like, we can't do this, Megan,
yep.
and we don't want to do this.
What's the
difference?
There's
a big difference between, like, we can't do this and we don't want to do this.
What is that difference? What does it feel like?
So, again, it's like it always comes back to me, like, is the thought I'm having being sponsored by love or fear? Mm-hmm. And I know that's such a, like, intangible thing to say, but you can feel it, and you can feel it. If you start to practice that, start to bring that question in, is the thing that I want to do, whether it's a yes or a no, because there can be no's that are sponsored by love in a big way, mm-hmm. is it being sponsored by like a love or by fear? Mm. And if it's being sponsored by fear, I tend to really categorically not empower that thought, that yes, that no, that choice.
So are you more likely to, if you're feeling kind of fearful, you're like, okay, I think I've got 12 reps in me, and you hear that kind of voice of fear coming in, do you ignore it and go for the 12?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then if you're like, I'm tired, mm-hmm. things are hurting, I'm gonna hold back and just finish with an 8. Mm-hmm. Do you want to know something really interesting?
Yeah.
That was always my mantra in track and field.
Yeah.
And I believe that was doing one less rep. I would see my other training partners injuring themselves constantly mm-hmm. because they were constantly pushing for that additional rep. And I would always, almost always try and complete the session. Mm-hmm. But if I felt satisfied with 5 out of the 6
yeah.
and the 5 out of 6 were really good quality,
yeah.
I would hold it there.
Yeah.
And I made it to every championship.
Yeah.
And I was able to then, in this really weird way, I was able to leave more mm-hmm. in the can mm-hmm. because I knew that giving myself a really solid 5 reps as opposed to like...
Had more value.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nobody wants a sloppy 7.
I also... That's my mantra. Nobody wants a sloppy pizza. I also had for the first time, and it happened, I don't know, months ago now, for the first time ever working out, I had this experience, and I haven't had it to that degree since, but I've seen people working out. And I think you see it more when I see videos of men doing it, but like they'll lift something heavy and then they'll like throw the weight down and like walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what are they? Like, this is very dramatic. Like, mm-hmm. what are we doing? Like, just put the weight down. Like, you really need to like throw it kind of. And I had this experience doing, I think it was shoulder presses.
Mm-hmm.
And they were heavy. And I was doing it, and I was going for it, and it was the last, you know, it was very, very iconic, like the last rep of the last set, and I sort of like yelled a little as I was like lifting it and getting the weight up, and it was a full body sensation of like, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
from a very like soul place,
guttural place,
very like primal, mm-hmm. guttural, and I was angry. And I was getting like anger out while I did it in a very non-specific, and I did it, and I like, I didn't throw the weights down because dramatic, but I did like put, like I let them go.
Yeah.
And I got up and I walked away for a second because I just had all of this energy like flooding through me, and it was exhilarating and liberating, and I had never experienced that before.
Wow. Welcome to the Olympics.
Thanks. Is that what that is? Should I be an Olympian now?
Absolutely. Like my little, like my face is lighting up because I'm like, oh, you're tapping into the inner athlete.
Yeah.
Like that inner power, that inner strength, that real push, that fight, that grit.
Yeah.
And
it's like looking for the, you know, leaning into the love is also looking for the voice and the part of you that's saying, like that's telling you what you can do rather than what you can't
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
That's the way yeah. to think about it. It's not like, think about it as love or fear if you want to be a real woo-woo, but really it's like the voice that's telling me I can do something
yeah.
versus the one that's telling me I can't.
Yeah.
So even if it's, I can yeah. do this for 8 more, that's very
this.
Different than I can't do 12.
100%.
That's like how I would frame it in this yeah. context.
Absolutely. There's that sense of you've got this,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Mm. And it might be, I've got this for 8.
Absolutely.
Or it might be, I've got this for 12.
Yeah.
But it's not, I can't do 12.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, Meg, I've got a little game for you. It's called, based on your book,
yeah.
Don't Hate, Meditate. The game is called Meditate or Hate. So I'm going to give you a number of controversial topics, and you've got to tell us whether you're still...
What could go wrong?
Exactly. Whether you're still ruminating on these topics or if you hate them.
Okay, great.
There's only a handful.
Okay.
And I don't want you to hesitate. I just want you to go straight in. Okay. Meditate or hate? Crocs.
Hate.
Low-rise jeans.
Hate.
Pickles.
Love.
Meditate?
Meditate. Sorry.
Oh, just
meditate.
Love. Pickleball.
Meditate.
Pineapple on a pizza.
Hate.
Ooh. Toenail extensions.
Hate.
Kitten heels.
Meditate.
I love it. Kitten heels are back. Meg.
Kitten heels are back. Low-rise jeans. Please be gone forever.
Toenail extensions out.
Gone forever.
What if you stub your toe, though?
Well, I mean, if it's
a fix.
Sure. If it's a fix and not a choice, not
That's
an aesthetic
funny.
Choice.
Pineapple on a pizza, gone.
Well, I don't eat grains or pizza or dairy. So for me, that's a whole bundle
thing.
Of...
Just pineapple on a stick then.
Yeah.
Megan, I really want to close out this episode with a 3-minute Megan. And this is something that me and producer Sam just made up.
I love it.
So we're going to go 3 minutes. Sam, you're going to run the clock.
I like that you're making this a training exercise. We're going to go 3 minutes. You're going to run the clock.
On your marks. You're going to go completely off the cuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to just slink back into my chair now and fall asleep.
Yeah, do it.
And I want the listeners as well to just get comfortable, get
yeah.
that furry blanket around
If you're
you.
Driving, save this for later.
Absolutely.
If it's safe for you to do so, get comfortable for just a few minutes. Go ahead and close your eyes.
So Meg's going to lead us now in 3 minutes of some mindful meditation.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Meg. On your marks, set, go.
So with your eyes closed, just start to notice the feeling of your breath at the tip of your nose. Just find and feel your breath there. follow the sensation of your breath, feeling it as it moves, and gently create some expansion within your upper abdomen. Find and feel your breath there. And then finally, find and feel the sensation of your breath within your chest. As your lungs fully fill with air, feel that rise in your chest. Find your breath there. Then expanding your awareness from the center of your chest to your entire physical body, from the crown of your head all the way down through to the soles of your feet. And just notice where it might be possible to soften a little bit more. Where you can put down the weight of your world just a little bit. Maybe it's the muscles in your face, relaxing your forehead or softening your eyes. Maybe it's resting the tip of your tongue on that ridge behind your two front teeth, feeling your mouth and your jaw begin to relax and soften. Maybe it's rolling your shoulders back and down, feeling tension from the muscles in your neck and your shoulders and your upper back begin to dissipate. Maybe it's relaxing your stomach. But letting everything go, putting down your world and inviting in a mindset right now of total acceptance, not because you necessarily like everything about this moment, but giving yourself permission to just take a break from engaging with it. Fully accepting this moment and fully accepting yourself in this moment exactly as you are. For the next minute at least, nothing needs to change, including you. And for just a moment, practice resting your awareness on the sensation of that breath, and as you inhale, silently repeat, I am, and as you exhale, here now. As you breathe in, I am, and as you breathe out, here now. We'll just rest here for a moment, and in this practice, simply noticing when your mind drifts. When you drift from that one thought to another one of the thousands of thoughts in your mind, when you drift to a sound in your environment or a sensation in your body, just notice where your mind has gone and gently bring yourself back. Breathing in, I am. Breathing out, here now. Breathing in, I am. Breathing out, here, now. With your eyes remaining closed, letting go of the repetition, letting go of your breath as that point of focus. And just connecting here for one final moment with what the mindset is that you want to empower throughout the rest of this day. What is the mindset that you want to measure your thoughts up against? To put in the driver's seat of your thoughts, your words, your actions. And if you can, just distill it down to one word: flexibility, presence, grace. Whatever that is for you, with the next inhale, silently repeat it to yourself, almost as if you're breathing it in. And then sigh everything out. And when you're ready, allowing your eyes to float open gently.
Oh, gosh.
Is that good?
That feels amazing.
You've clocked 4 minutes today, love.
Oh, my God. That's
you're a meditator.
A personal best.
A personal best.
Megan, that was amazing.
Oh,
I love a 3 minute Meg. That's so good. Meg, thank you so much for joining us on the Slay podcast. You know, we love having you here, obviously, in the Slay gym. You've been an amazing support to our online community as well through the pandemic. Remind us again where we can find that 21-day course.
Go and check it out. It's at Meditate with Megan, M-E-G-A-N. There's a free meditation up there you can check out. Otherwise, it's super inclusively priced because I really wanted everyone to be able to have 21 days of meditation to get them through all of the things in life. So go and sign up for that. You'll love it.
Love it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I had so much fun.
That concludes this episode of Slay. I hope you're feeling way more chilled after that. Stay tuned for more empowering discussions on female health, fitness, and life. You can follow me at Louise Hazel, and you can follow Megan at Meg Monahan on social media. Don't forget to check out her book, Don't Hate Meditate. And you can check out the Slay brand at Slay Athletic. And don't forget to subscribe to the Slay podcast and leave a review if you haven't done so already on Spotify. You can also get all of the tools and resources that are mentioned in our episodes of the Slay podcast in the Slay app. Download it now for free from the App Store and join our online community.